What's up, everybody? Welcome to the MMA Kill Shot podcast from DFS Army. We got UFC 292. Don't get caught up in just the one main event. We got two main events. We got two title fights. Aljamain Sterling and Sean O'Malley is the one you know about for the bantamweight title. And Weili Zhang taking on Amanda Lemos. Can't wait for that one as well for the 115-pound title. Going to be a good time. I'm Sniper with you guys week in and week out, except for the vacation I'm taking in a couple weeks. But don't tell that to my boss, who's over there, fantasy football geek Kevin and Monk. You guys ready for
not approved?
Not you know what?
Not we'll, approve we'll, of that.
I'll coordinate with HR and we will get back to you, sir. You guys ready for this card? I wasn't high on it when I started the week, and as I've done more and more tape on them, I'm behind it. I'm there.
I have multiple bets already that I put out early in the week, and that rarely, and every one of them is plus money.
I got a kill shot this week.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this one a ton. I mean, two title fights. You said it. Got a couple of fights added. Damone Blackshear on 7 days' notice against Mario Bautista. Some Chito Vera. Some really good fights. A great main card. Really looking forward to it.
Should be a good time. By the way, if you're new to the show, hit that like button, hit the subscribe button for me. We're going to cover, break down every fight. We're going to talk betting odds. We're going to, the DraftKings salaries will be there because I think we're all draft. We focus on DraftKings, but plenty of good betting stuff in here as well. So don't go away if you're a betting guy. We're going to cover all that good stuff. And we're not going to make you wait to the end. I'm not going to honey dick you guys. We're going to start with the main event. Aljamain Sterling, he's minus 260, 8,900 on DraftKings. Sugar Sean O'Malley, he's plus 220 on the comeback, 7,300 on DraftKings. And I just realized the one thing that Kevin likes to, I probably need to add to my graphic here, is I do not have the fight goes to decision odds handy, but luckily for me, I stalled just long enough there that I pulled it up. Fight ends inside the distance is minus 230. Since football is coming, and for those who have been around the block for a while know that means that we'll be missing Kevin, I'm going to let you start this week. What do you got for your main event? Because I know you got a bit of a hot take here.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it's super hot, but listen, this is an interesting fight because Aljamain Sterling should, on paper, kind of win this fight without too much trouble, in the sense that Aljo is a grappler primarily, and he's got some nasty control. Like, his control is, I mean, at this point, I would say it's as good as anybody's, right? His ability to control you with his jiu-jitsu, you know, it's reaching Damian Maya-esque levels of, like, once he's got you in his arms, it's hard to get him off you, right? Another statistic that pushes me towards Aljo would be the fact that Sean O'Malley has not been good at stopping takedowns. He was taken down plenty of times on his way to defeating Piotr Jan, but nonetheless,
and he grabbed the cage 15 fucking times.
Cheating, whatever. But he, and did he win that fight? I don't know. But here's the thing. So everything on paper says Aljo, I like Aljo and all of that. But there is sort of a side factor here of note. And the side factor is Aljamain Sterling has made it very, very clear that he wants to move up in weight class. He's having a harder and harder time. He just doesn't want to do it. Whatever it is, these guys get to be the champ. And I feel like sometimes they're just like sick of it and they want to switch it up. So he is looking at potentially moving up in weight class anyway. So this may be one of his last fights at this level. Basically, I heard Ray Longo talking about this on the Kenny and Florian podcast with John Anik. And there was a little bit of like, as long as the weight cut goes okay, he should be fine in this one. So the question is, Aljo slows down a little bit. I'm not going to say he has a cardio issue. He doesn't. He slows down a little bit at the end of fights because he's grappling so much. You just get tired. So he slowed down a little bit. So I think that there is some possibility that Aljo doesn't come in the ultimate shape or has a slightly tougher time cutting the weight. He's been having a tougher, tougher time to where O'Malley might be able to sort of stage a late fight comeback here and actually do a little damage later in the fight. I do think that Aljo will control him early, and I think Aljo wins those first couple rounds. But I do think there is some reasonable, better than, let's say, minus plus 210 odds, or even better. Actually, I have a better suggestion for a bet, But there is a chance that sort of Aljo gets a little tired later in the fight. Sean O'Malley takes over. O'Malley is long. He understands who he's fighting. So he has been training nonstop, I'm sure, on takedown defense and more, not necessarily takedown defense, but distance maintenance. You know, he's long. He can maintain distance if he's fully focused on it. So as my initial thought on this fight was obvious, Aljo, he's got all the advantages. But I think Sean O'Malley is live here and live for a late finish. So I like the idea of either taking a stab on O'Malley at plus 210 or even better, taking a supreme long shot stab on O'Malley to win in round four or round five. Now, listen, we're not getting too crazy, but those are plus 1400 or plus 2000 odds props. But I don't mind taking a little taste of those late round Sean O'Malley finish props just in case Aljo does have a tougher time cutting the weight and you start to see maybe him get a little tired as the fight goes on. And I think O'Malley will piece him up on the feet.
I'm going to add in that I do think Sterling's got a lot to fight for in this fight because he needs to win or he's fucking up his fight with Volkanovski. Like that's a money fight.
Oh, man, if you're thinking about fight, Volk, you're going to have a hard time winning this fight.
Yeah. That's I'm just saying that's what he has to fight for. I did watch the press conference today. And our guy Dan Levy, who we all know from Best Fight Picks, former DFS Army guy, he posted on Twitter, you know, while I was scrolling around, I think he's right, when I watched it, the same thought that Sean O'Malley is winning the head games by a lot in this fight. Like, Aljamain Sterling looks a little head fucked. And he's just that kind of guy. I do agree with you. Stylistically, it should be Aljo. We've seen Aljo caught before early, too. Marlon Moraes put him out, you know, with a head kick. But everything, Aljo should win the minutes. He should win everywhere other than getting caught and knocked out, which is totally possible. So I'm right there with you on the breakdown. I don't think I'm as high on O'Malley as you are, but I get the logic. There are other dogs I want to take a stab at.
I don't want to say I'm high on O'Malley so much as I'm just – it's some of these intangibles or some of these – outside factors that I think allow O'Malley to be more like live, whereas I didn't think he should be initially based on the matchup itself. What do you say, Monk Maddox?
Yeah, I think I like Sterling overall here, but for DraftKings, I don't know how excited I am, honestly. Sterling in his last two has put up a tremendous amount of points, but before that, Petr Yan was 86. And the first one was 99. And then before that, Corey Sandhagen was 94. And that was a first round finish. So he's not going to be making, you know, optimal lineup at 99 or 90 to 100 points. Meanwhile, Sean O'Malley, 65 against Jan, you know, whether or not he should have won that is an entirely different conversation. I like this fight, so I'm totally fine with it. But then before that, it's Thomas Almeida, it's Chris Moutinho, and it's Howley and Paiva. Like, those guys are nowhere near Sandhagen, Jan twice, Dillashaw and Henry freaking Cejudo. So I think I favor Sterling here. I agree. He does have a lot to fight for. I don't know how much stock I put in head games. Like, we've seen this with Izzy, like Sean Strickland got in Izzy's head and he wasn't even fighting that motherfucker. So once those cage doors close, I think a switch happens. Hopefully for a lot of these guys, we hope for Aljamain Sterling, but I think I'm favoring him and the wrestling. But overall for DraftKings, this fight's going to be insanely high owned, and I really don't know how much I don't want to go over, so I guess I'm going to have to go under. But Sterling is averaging, you know, 100 points per win. That's it, 100 points over his 15 wins. Like I said, recently it's been better, but over his career it's 100. O'Malley's, you know, just a couple of, you know, a half a point less than that at 99.5 over 8 UFC wins. So neither guy is barely averaging 100 points. Nobody gives up a ton when they lose. Like, Aljo gives up 77 points when he loses. O'Malley gave up 97 when Cheeto beat him. So I don't know. I might have to take a stand and give the real hot take here and go under on this main event.
Don't hate it. There's a bunch of other good fights to target.
I would caution on that approach. Just like my one caution for that approach is, listen, this is a card with not as many fights. I mean, it's not a 14 or 15 fight card. So keeping that in mind, and there are a couple of kind of stinkers potentially on here, but you know what? Not that many. And we saw last week, even though it was the main event, we saw some fights last week that were surprising that I like every fight put up a monster number, but there were some that were surprising that put up a monster number, and therefore some fights we thought about going all in on. And it's funny, we talk about on the show, all in on a couple of fights that, like, yeah, they put up over 100, but it wasn't in the nuts. Who was it that we said all in? $9,300 guy last week, and he had a good score. The guy who wins in the first round, Terrence McKinney, had a good score.
Yeah, not me. Well, I did say play those women's flyweights, though. We saw Luana Santos make it. We saw another women's fighter make it on there.
I'm way high on the women's flyweight. Oh, we're going to talk about it later.
Yeah,
I have an obscene number. So yep. If you follow me on Twitter, I kind of tease the GPP article I did this week for the VIPs, which benefit to being a VIP. But the way I start that article is I rank everybody 1 through 12. Just fight inside the distance. Like, what are those numbers? And then I give kind of intangibles. And that fight, I think it raised up a bunch of spots just on the intangibles.
Sniper, I need to get you to move your screening in front of you, so it looks like you're talking to me. Because right now it looks like you're talking to Jan Brady over on the side over there.
You know what's funny is it's weird. It's flipped.
Jan.
Marsha.
That way. Yeah. So anyway, I love this fight. I think this is I would caution on fading too much of it. Aljo, if he is going to be in this fight, has to be grappling the entire time. That's where I just think the points are going to come. The styles clash too intensely. How does Aljo get there without grappling the whole time?
Well, if he's 50% owned, how much are you going to have rostered of him?
I don't think he'll be 50. Probably 43. And I certainly am just going to match the feel. Until we get through this breakdown, I will decide whether I want to be 100% exposed to the fight. But like O'Malley, if he wins late at 7,300, he's going to be in the nuts. It's 4 or 5 rounds. It's too many rounds of there is a scenario where O'Malley wins late and doesn't make the nuts, where he's grapple fucked for the first two or three.
There's a scenario where Sterling Suvalev stretches O'Malley in the early second round and nobody makes the optimal lineup.
It could get there, but he'll score well, but it won't get there. But he would have had 3 takedowns in the first along the way. That's what I'm saying. There's no, I don't see any scenario where Aljo is just like, hey, let's have a low volume striking affair with Sean O'Malley. He will not want to strike with him. Sean O'Malley's bigger, he's longer, he's a better striker, and he's a higher volume striker. The whole time, Aljo's just going to be like, all right, I'm looking for an in. Now, he might not find an in. I've seen fights go crazy and he never gets the in, but he's going to be looking for those takedowns the whole fight. Like, there is not a time where he's going to be like, let me just stand with Sean O'Malley and see how we do. Or if he does that would be absurdly stupid and just nonsensical. It's not going to happen. Just like, you know, it's not going to happen that way. So I just think, there's so much grappling potential, 5 rounds of it. You have to play this fight. A lot of the fights you talked about also were 3-round fights, those scores. And the extra 2 rounds, I mean, it's just too big of an advantage to give up. And, of course, in cash, I think this is a viable, although the next fight is a much more viable.
According to the numbers.
Well, I'd like to hear from you on that one. So cash stack, I think, is certainly viable here. But you tell me, I think the next fight is more viable, but you tell me why not.
Well, the numbers. Let's just jump right into it.
That one.
We got Weili Zhang -320 taking on Amanda Lemos. Comeback on her is +270. DraftKings salary is $9,200 for Zhang. Lemos $7,000. Fight ends inside the distance. I know why this is giving me pause in cash games. -325 to end inside the distance. That is bigger than the main event, and it's really because they may be 115 pounders. Both these ladies finish. Weili Zhang can grapple. We saw her head kick people into fucking oblivion. And Amanda Lemos, really, her path to victory in this fight is the flash KO and kind of her, not even flash KO, the freakish knockout power she has for 115 pounds. You don't usually see hitting power like that. But my quick breakdown of it is Weili Zhang is the better technical striker. She's the better grappler. I saw Lemos standing arm triangled by Jessica Andrade. I think there's plenty of holes in Lemos's game to be exposed. Not that she's not good. She's obviously deserves a title shot with the run she's been on, but Weili Zhang is up there. And I know it's easy to say that when you have a guy who's a champion, but I'm trying to get myself more to see holes in champions, because we just tend to think, okay, champion, they're unbeatable. And not that Weili's unbeatable, but she has very few holes. She has much less holes than Alexa Grasso, the 125-pound champ. Leon Edwards, the 170-pound men's champ. Yeah, I fucking said it, haters. Leon's going to lose the first time he defends that belt. I'm calling it now. And people are going to hate that take.
But I have been saying that about Jamahal Hill a little bit too, but actually 205 is pretty barren.
205 is weak. Plus Jamahal Hill hung out with us, so you know what, he gets
bonus points. We're I'm a fan.
And but he's got that kind of that freakish power. So Whaley can grapple. She can get a finish just through volume. Can out volume Lemos. Lemos just needs the knockout. And unless Whaley doesn't look right, I like plenty of Whaley Zhang. I do like Lemos in playing to some of her in tournaments, because if she wins, it's going to be the big score. But I don't like her floor. And there's enough of the dogs that I do like, including one down at the bottom who I'm starting to think is going to be pretty popular, even though I picked him as soon as he took the fight. Hint, hint. Seems like people are jumping on board with that. So he may not be – he's going to be chalky, and I'll just punt down there rather than having to play. You know, you don't have to go – I'd rather stack the main, play Whaley, and then punt with Blackshear if you haven't been able to figure that out. We'll talk about that fight later, rather than double stacking. That's the way I'm leaning towards it right now. Monk, what do you got for this fight?
I actually think I like this fight more than the main event for DraftKings. Whaley Zhang, I mean, Aljo is going to wrestle, and he's probably going to wrestle dominantly, and I do want some of that in my lineup because it scores very well. O'Malley's going to strike, and he could win, you know, by KO or late, which could score well, so I want a little bit of him. Zhang Whaley does both of those things very well. 4 points overall per minute, 6.1 per minute inside the distance, and her average per win is 7 or 8 points better than both of the guys in the main event. Her ceiling is the second best on the card, only to RoboCop at almost 130 points. Her floor is by far the best on the card, which makes her a fantastic cash play at 9,200. Yeah, I'm going to not be able to get away from her very much in cash, that's for sure. Let's see, 4 of her 7 wins over 100 points. She's only 400 over her average salary, and I think her ownership is going to be lower than it should be because of who is in the main event. So I'm going to try to take advantage of that. Let's see, 2 of her wins, I believe that's 2 of them, finished in the very first round. Meanwhile, like you said, Sniper, any win for Lemos at 7K, I want some of that. It's going to probably be as close as it can be to the optimal, if not make it. And Lemos has grappling of her own. She's got very good striking as well. I was surprised to learn, for some reason, I always think Lemos is way taller or way taller or longer than she actually is. But both women, 5'4".
It's because she fought Jessica Andrade, who's amazing.
Yeah, that's probably why. Yeah, she looked like a giant getting arm triangled there. Switch stands for Zhang versus southpaw for Lemos. I love this fight for DraftKings. I think the winner has a great shot at being optimal. And like I said, yeah, Zhang for cash all day. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, lock this thing in. Lock this thing in tournaments too. You're locking the winner of this one into your lineup. I agree. I think Zhang is, you know, the better fighter. She's the champ, all that good stuff. But Lemos has power, and she could win, and she'll be super live early. I've seen Lemos get tired late in fights as well. I don't think that means she has a bad gas tank. I just think she puts it all out there early and kind of gives it her all, and she'll slow down a little bit as the fight goes on. So I'd have Lemos most live early in this fight, especially in that first round. You want to take a crazy flyer. That's where you go for that first round finish flyer. You take a little 10.1 unit stab on Lemos by KO round one. You can get that for Lemos. Hang on. Yeah, win around plus 800. So plus anywhere from plus 800 to plus. I like that. That's a little risk that is worth taking. But more importantly for DraftKings, this fight is going to score huge, Monk. I totally agree. So you got to get a piece of both sides of it. I still lean that this would be a better. That, like, I think that O'Malley, if he gets grappled the whole time or submitted early, I don't know. I kind of would lean, if I needed to stack one of the main event fights, I'd probably lean this second fight over the first one. But
yeah, I don't like stacking the first one. The first one is either going to be. I don't think, yeah, exactly. It's either going to be Aljo wrestling him for the whole time, or it's going to be O'Malley strike. It's not going to be both, I don't think. So, I don't like that.
It's probably not needed on this card is how I would go, because there is other punts that I think are safer and will score high. Remember, I'm just taking the cheap guy in cash. I just want him to not get a zero. Like, I kind of want him to go to decision, or if I can get a decision in a five rounder and get 55 points from a loss, that's the ultimate cash play. But I don't know that either of these guys is doing that. They need to win. Probably, I think, both of these fights are probably going to finish before we get to decision time.
Let's go ahead and move on to Neil Magny. He is a big dog. He's plus 380, taking on Ian Garry, minus 505. Magny 6,600 on DK. Garry is 9,600. Ian Machado Garry. Little bitch. I personally have something against Ian Garry now since I saw that tape. I'll get that in a second. Fight ends inside the distance. Yeah,
I didn't
see minus 175. So what I'm referring to outside of the fight is Ian Machado gets a call that Jeff Neal has pulled out of his camp or out of the fight. And he proceeds to basically call him a bitch. Somebody on his team says that Jeff Neal's pussy is hurting him. Jeff Neal dealing with fucking brain bleeds and is like, don't fucking, like, I'm not even like a big Jeff Neal mark. Don't do that shit. That rubbed me the absolute wrong way. And I already didn't love Garry. And now I just want him to get fucking knocked out every fight. But while I personally don't like you, I can't pick against you here. I really want to too, because I've always been a Neil Magny truther. He is a definition of a gatekeeper. Machado Garry is top 10 caliber. I think he's going to win. I just don't know how great he's going to score. And 9,600 on DraftKings feels fucking ridiculous. I'm not paying minus 500 on a bet. It's kind of just overall stay away. No thank you for me. Garry's just a little better everywhere. I think he's going to fight at range. I don't think he'll get caught up in the Neil Magny clinch fest that we've seen before and that people fall victim to. I mean, sure, I guess Magny's technically live to a weird fucked up decision because the judges suck, but Garry should win this fight. He's the pick. It's just, I don't like the odds. I don't like the salaries. You have a different take, Geek?
Yeah. My different take is the more important component to this is I'm not paying $9,600 for Ian Garry on DraftKings when Zhang Weili and Aljo are available for cheaper. So right off the bat, I have no interest, not to mention that this fight is actually around plus 115 to go.
It's minus 175 to end in a finish.
I don't know what you're seeing. I don't know where, what book is that on?
I'm on fight.io. Under fight ends inside the distance. It's minus 175 on Bet Online. It's minus 185 on Bovada.
There you go. Okay. So on DraftKings, I'm looking at it. It's minus 165. But the over 2.5 rounds is plus 100 on DraftKings as well.
What the fuck? 65 cents in the last 2.5 minutes?
Yeah. There's a weird dichotomy here.
What the fuck is that?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that. So over 2.5 rounds is plus 100.
If you have multiple books, hang on. If you have multiple books, DraftKings over 2.5 rounds plus 100, Bet Online under 2.5 rounds plus 135. You can get plus on both.
I almost feel like the Bet Online number is fake. You have to see it on that book. You can't trust fight odds for that number. Because if it is, I'm going to arbitrage it until it's gone. Like, I'm
that's just, what it looks
sorry,
like.
Guys, I got to end
it. It looks
the show.
Like an arbitrage move.
Yeah, I would end the show and just do that. So my point is, this fight's probably going second, a couple rounds. Even if it goes to round two at 9,600, Monk, he's not paying off 9,600. There's no – what scenario does he pay off 9,600? You tell me. Where is – what does he need? He's winning the third 60 seconds.
First minute win with a knockout is what it would take.
I say with no knockout, he probably gets there too, but like
– could be, but depending on – I mean, if you've got Aljo and Wei Li scoring way more than that, he could be out of there, man. 96 is a lot, and he only averages 96 points per win. He has put up 109 – in both of his round one finish wins, which was against Jordan Williams and D-Rod. But other than that, he does not really score too well overall. Average value is just 10.5 overall. He himself has been knocked down. Magny loves to get finished. 7 of his 9 losses are finishes, but 5 of those 7 finishes are submissions, and Gary has no professional, or at least no subs in the UFC. Maybe it's different professionally. I haven't looked, but yeah, I assume it's going to be Gary KO super early, and that's the only way he has a chance of paying off this salary. But I'm hoping this one goes to decision and Gary scores like 85 points in a win, and I'm super happy I didn't play any of them. Magny at 66, I guess I'm interested up to like 10%. I think that's an okay number. Maybe if the ownership's like 7 or 8, if it's somehow under 10%, I'll go a little bit over, but nothing past 15.
Something about guys that have come through for me as an underdog before, I do like to go back to that. Does it look good for Magny here? No, but Ian Gary does not have some otherworldly takedown defense either. And if Magny manages to get him down and hold him down, he could squeeze a round out and maybe a second one. So we've seen.
What's the +3.5 here? What's the spread number on this is what I'd like to know.
That is not a bad play here as well. You do the +3.5. I kind of probably won't do it because I think Gary should knock Magny out late in the fight. I'm probably not doing that one. But in general, I would just say, fuck this fight on DraftKings, especially the Ian Gary side. I will have some Magny. I'm with you. If he pulls like one of these Russian, like, sneaky win, just by getting the takedown and holding the opponent down and squeezing out a couple rounds, it wouldn't blow my mind. It wouldn't be the craziest thing that ever happened. I don't think that score is that amazing either. To be honest, even though there's grappling, it's probably just a lot of holding it down, but I don't really see that working out. I think Gary will just get back up. So for me, fade this fight, fade Gary, even though I think Gary will win.
Moving on, a late replacement fight. Damon Blackshear steps up. He's a +195 dog against Mario Bautista, who's a -230 favorite. Batista's 9,100 on DraftKings, and Blackshear will be 7,100. Do we have the only line I have for this? Distance wise right now, is under 2.5. Actually, I should give you the over. The over 2.5 rounds is -125. I kind of like the under there because you got a guy coming on short notice who fought last week. Short notice fights, like this fight typically end in finishes. I'm pretty interested in this fight. And I'm geek gear first for this one, but I got a hot take coming. So I would bring the thunder here. What do you got?
I don't know how hot this is, but I was just thinking about the monetary benefit to a fighter of having fought last week and again this week. So normally they have to pay for this long training camp and there's this whole process and, cost them money. And I paid 15 grand. I went to training camp. I did this 8 weeks of preparation and you canceled my fight. Well, Damon was like, nah, you know what? That fight was so easy. Dana, if you got another one, I can come back next week. I already did my training camp. So he doesn't have to pay again. He already has his training camp.
Didn't he?
Did he get a bonus?
I hope for the third twister ever in the promotion. He fucking better of.
That was better that scored like 700. There was a lot of DraftKings.
There were a lot of fights that deserved a bonus last week. I'm not sure which one or who got one, but the point is, good on Damon for doing that and pulling that off. As far as this fight goes, yeah, I think to your point, Sniper, I do think this is a live dog situation. I think the line is a little bit much here. If you look at Bautista's history and who he's beaten, I mean, there's some decent names on there, but Guido Canetti, Lopez, some of these guys just aren't that good, and so I feel like he's being a little bit overrated at the sports book, right? I think the line is a little bit wider than I would be comfortable with. His best win, definitely, and this is a good win, is Brian Kelleher. Fine. But Kelleher in recent years just hasn't been that good. So I don't know. To me, I think Bautista is a little bit overrated. He comes in as quote unquote the grappler for this matchup, and that could work out. Listen, Damon Blackshear has not been that good at stopping takedowns, but his grappling looked pretty good in his last fight. So, yeah, it looked good in his last fight. Earlier in his career, but it wasn't that long ago. I mean, it was just in March. His fights have all been recent. But, like, Fareed Basharat was taking him down at will. Yusuf Zalal took him down fine. Even Luan Lacerda took him down. So they all took him down, but he got back up. I think this is a live dog situation. And again, going back to the Mario Bautista side, I don't need to play a $9,100 fighter when I have Aljo at 89, or I have Zhang Weili at 92. He just falls in a price point that's not super interesting. But I do have to credit Bautista as being a guy who, you know, does score really well when he wins. So I'm not going to full fade, but I'm actually curious. Styles makes fights, Monken. You know, this guy's been tearing it up on the DraftKings scores, but against pretty close to zeros, and they've all been these first rounds. So I don't think you're doing that to Demon, but what do you say?
By the way, Monk, before you go, he did not get 50K.
Did not what?
Yeah. He did not get the bonus. The bonus is that card. It went to. This is just. Yeah, I don't think he did. It was last week. Last week was UFC Nashville. Right? Oh no, I'm off a whole week. Never mind. I'm going to look it up now while you give your breakdown. I was looking at Nashville.
My goodness.
I could be wrong. I'm going to double check.
Let's hope so. I love this fight for DraftKings. I'm going to be very heavy on this fight for DraftKings on both sides. Bautista is a scoring machine. He's a takedown machine. 70% takedown accuracy. It. Actually, he did get it. Oh, he did get it.
I was looking at the wrong card. I was like, what the f-?
Oh, there it is. Okay, he did 60, get it.
The twist. Good. Yeah, 69% accuracy for Bautista. Almost three takedowns landed per 15 minutes. So if Blackshear's going to get up, let's get some rinse and repeat takedowns. Yeah, I think Blackshear did look good. And we have seen guys come off of, you know, a couple of like 7 to 14 days notice, turnaround, I should say, and look decent. Khamzat being the one that comes to mind. I can't really remember too many others off the top of my head. But there is a chance that Blackshear could gas out here. He didn't go past the first round. I believe he finished Johnson in the first round with that twister. Didn't go past the first round. So I am interested to see how he's going to look in the second and third rounds after that quick turnaround. That said, he scores very well when he wins. He's got a huge wrestling upside. Like you said, also allows two takedowns almost per 15 minutes, but giant value per win. And Bautista at 9,100, I think he has potential for fantastic value if he can get some rinse and repeat takedowns. He controls 72% of the grappling time he's involved in. Yes, he does have a very Sean O'Malley type of resume, which is to say not very good overall, but still a better mathematical strength of schedule than Blackshear in his last five. So I like Bautista here. I also like Blackshear for DraftKings, and I'm going to try to get over the field on both sides of this one for sure.
Blackshear has a brutal loss in his past history.
Yeah, he sure does.
Yeah, I mean, you got to go back a ways, but losing to Chris Moutinho, not a good look, even back in 2018.
No, it's not. Do the same thing for Bautista, though. Bautista lost to Trevin Jones. He got knocked out by Trevin Jones, and he got armbarred by Corey Sandhagen before Corey Sandhagen knew how to wrestle. That wasn't Habib Sandhagen. That was get backpacked by Sterling Sandhagen. So interesting there. It's a low level fight, I think, in terms of main card. Yeah, but this is shades of opening card in terms of finish potential and volatility. I like Blackshear. I think, just like Geek said, I think Bautista is being overvalued. But I'm on the Monk side in terms of I like the fight both sides because I think because Zhang and because Sterling are right there, I don't think it's going to be that hard for me to get leverage on Bautista. And while he's running through cans, he is running through them and putting up big scores. And Blackshear just fought last week. He could go all or nothing, just let it hang out. We could see a big score on either side here. I think there's massive potential on both sides. But my pick straight up is Blackshear. I think he is the slightly better fighter. I think his grappling can hang in with Bautista. I actually think he's the better technical striker. I think he's going to have to worry about the speed and the volume of Bautista and stopping takedowns. But I think it's a close, it's basically betting-wise, to me, it's a pick 'em fight, dog or pass. I know you get value on Bautista for short notice, but 80, 85 cents because short notice is too much, and I like Bautista quite a bit there. Move on to Marlon Chito Vera. He's minus 200, which feels bad, honestly. Take it on Pedro Munhoz at plus 160. Vera is 8,600 on DraftKings. Munhoz is 7,600. Line on this fight ends inside the distance is plus 250, so should see the judges' scorecards here. That gives me very little interest in Marlon Vera, aside from the fact that he is a slow starter, and I think the line is too wide in general. But Monk, what do you think?
Yeah, for GPPs, I'm not really looking to get this one in a ton. Both guys average about 95 points per win over their long UFC careers. So pretty big sample size there. Both their ceilings are okay, but what I do like is both of their floors. I don't mind either side of this for cash, and that's how I'm going to be looking to play it, quite honestly. Like you said, Cheeto, very slow starter, but he has a, he's knocking people down. He's throwing up, 1.6 subs per takedown landed. Nobody's knocked him down yet in the UFC, according to the stats anyway. Nobody's throwing submissions up against him, so that is a very interesting number. But Munoz is the same exact thing. He's the one knocking people down. He's the one throwing subs, whereas no one is doing that to him. Both guys love to go to decisions for the most part. Let's see, 11 for Munoz and 10 for Cheeto Vera just in the UFC. So I like this fight for cash game specifically. And honestly, 51 points for Munoz's floor is very good. 42 for Vera, also very good. I could see a scenario where this goes all three rounds. Somebody scores 95, just under 100 points, and the loser scores 50 points, and you end up with 140 as a total. I'm trying to talk myself out of the random stack of Vera and Munoz here. What the other stacks that we mentioned are probably going to be extremely one-sided, most likely. Nobody's going to score 140 points in either of those matchups. So
just like to understand the advantage of the stack and why we do it, and you could get all of that advantage just by playing Munoz. Like, there's no reason in doing. You don't want to play the favorite, who's not likely to score that well, in a stack, because just play the underdog.
He's a cheaper. He's like the third cheapest favorite on the card.
He is on the cheaper side, but it's not that much cheaper. Like I said, 86 compared to 89. We're only
saving. I like Vera better than Ian Garry. I like his score better than Ian Garry. If Garry doesn't get a first round KO, who's going to score better there? And we're saving $1,000.
That's fair. But we already said we weren't playing Garry.
Where are you getting his scoring potential numbers from? Because they're just he doesn't do anything in the first round. He never does anything.
Well, he put up 95 against Cruz. He put up 128 against Font. 94 Edgar. 97 against Davey Grant. It's pretty consistent.
90. Well, the Cruz, that was the fourth. That was the fourth round of that fight.
Yep, barely. It was under 4.5. Font was extra long. Three rounds against Edgar was 94. Three rounds against Grant was 97. He's pretty consistent.
He needed knockdowns. Three knockdowns against Cruz. But Cruz is a tough guy to fight. Listen, Marlon Vera for me is a GPP play. He could win by an early finish or something. I don't see any of that, though. I actually would note that Pedro Munoz is not the kind of fighter that you're going to be knocking down all that frequently.
Just ask Sean O'Malley.
You could fade Marlon Vera fully. Just Munoz. Hey, I have a bet on Munoz. What up? First bet of the card. First official play, although I have a little bet on O'Malley to win as well. I don't want to make it official, but I got a bet on O'Malley. But I've got a bet on Munoz, and here's the reasoning. Sniper, it's just what you said, but translated into betting, which is effectively, this is a really close fight. It's probably going to come down to the judges. It's probably going to go to decision. It's going to look close. It's going to be hard to be watching it and know who's winning. And you're giving me plus 165 on a guy who we might all be watching this fight going, I don't know who won. I'm not sure. It looked close, right? Monk, Vera starts slow traditionally, right?
Sure.
Finishes Munoz very wins round strong. One, right?
He could, but also Vera is much better at handling leg kicks than one Sean O'Malley was, who ate all 31 of them. Vera's not going to do that.
But he will take the leg kicks, and Pedro Munoz will dish them out still. So, like, the leg kicks will have – Pedro Munoz is a good fighter. This is a guy who's been fighting UFC. His losses are against the absolute best. Sterling, Aldo, Cruz, Frankie Edgar. You know, he's lost to top five guys. Now, we can have a discussion about whether we think Marlon Vera is a top five. I don't think he's a top fiver. I think people love him top too. 15. I like him too. Like I enjoy him. He's a comeback kid. There's a lot of things I like about Marlon Vera. He just pulls it out of his ass. He finds the way to win. But like, he's not a top five fighter. He had a shot and he blew it. Like, he had his chance to fight top guys, and he lost. So let's look. I mean, he just fought. Yeah, Corey Sandhagen.
I mean, you can literally say that about me. He fought Jose Aldo and lost. He fought Dominic Cruz.
That's right. Munoz is definitely not a top five. Like, yeah, he loses to those top five guys.
And Cheeto's only 30. And he's lost to Corey Sandhagen, who's the number one contender. And that's the only fight he's dropped.
Yeah,
in the past,
but he had that fake win against O'Malley too.
This all comes down to how you value Vera, and I'm on the geek side as well. I don't value him very highly. Like, yeah, he's good. He's tough. He'll move forward. He'll beat who he's supposed to beat. I mean, yeah, he knocked out the ghost of Frankie Edgar. Ooh, like, I don't give a fuck about that. He knocked out the ghost of Dominic Cruz. Ooh, not that he shouldn't be doing those things. He's not top 10. I don't think he's title contender, you know, that stratosphere, like some people are saying. I don't think anybody's thinking about that, about Pedro Munhoz. No one's going to think that. I think Vera's a little overvalued, and I think Munhoz is a little undervalued. I think it should be a pick 'em. I think they're both top 11 to 15 guys. That's how I rate them. But in terms of DraftKings, it's hard for me to see Vera putting up a big score. I mean, 95, 97, even if he, I think that's his ceiling. That seems to be his absolute ceiling. And Munhoz, I don't think they get to 8,600.
Munhoz has fought finishers throughout his career, big name finishers. He's never been knocked out. He's never even been knocked down that I've seen.
He was going to beat Sean O'Malley in that fight. He was 100% going to beat Sean O'Malley in that fight. Like that chain, that I put that, and O'Malley can talk all the shit he wants. That fucking saved him. That saved him a lot. I was there. O'Malley was going to lose that fight. 100%.
Was I there? Was I with you?
No, that was International Fight Week.
Oh, okay. I'm like,
slightly later. People were leaving the building during the main event. The funniest, yeah. In hindsight, one of the funniest things I've ever fucking seen. Or the fourth round of Cannonier Adesanya, the escalator was packed. I left. Midway through the fifth.
Why did everybody leave?
It was awful. It said Adesanya Cannonier through round five. It was Adesanya dancing around. Cannonier,
oh, that horrible fight! Fight, yeah.
And I was like, I'm in Vegas. I'm gonna go fucking. I went to the club. I'm like, I'm done. I'm.
The hell club did you go to?
I was in Vegas that night. I went to Club's Lucerne. I went. Where is it? It was in Caesars. I went back to Caesars Palace.
Can you see?
I went
to Nobu. Sniper at the dance club after like fights. He's like, oh, I'm going to the club. I like to move it.
I mean, if I'm gonna go, I'll be the creepy guy in the corner. I'm fine with that. There's a show in Vegas, and I'm here for it.
Like, yeah, same.
There was
if you had an appointment at the brothel, I'd be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. You gotta get out of here.
Brothel. I didn't bring my penicillin with me.
Yeah, that's fair.
Anyway,
my call here, guys. Fade Cheeto, YOLO. Play Munhoz. I got to bet on Munhoz anyway. I think it goes to split decision. You always take the underdog in those spots. I think Munhoz can win this fight straight up. I'm picking Munhoz to win, and I'm fading Cheeto.
Let's talk Chris Weidman. Oh, can we go back to Cheeto? I don't want to talk about this fight. It's depressing. Weidman's plus 220. The comeback is the underdog, the favorite. Is Brad Tavares minus 275. Weidman 7,200 on DraftKings. Tavares is 9,000. Fight ends inside the distance is minus 140. This is Weidman's first fight back since that horrific leg break. He was looking regressed before that. You know, he's a Long Island guy. He's my dude. Big, big Weidman fan. Father Time is undefeated. He was already coming down. He was knocked out by Jacare Souza. He was clearly on the decline. And he broke his leg, and now he's going to try and come back for one more against the guy who's old in Tavares, but is not regressing. Just looks like the same old tough warrior he's always been. It's a bad matchup for Chris Weidman. But who are you going to give Weidman at this point in his career? You can't give him a scrub. He's a former champion. I'm curious about what his show money is, quite honestly. Look, Tavares wins. It's hard to really quantify how much Tavares I want to play, though, at 9,000, because Weidman could – He said he's going to throw a leg kick. The first thing he's going to do is throw a leg kick. He could break his leg again. Would not surprise me at all. Any striking either.
I would be surprised.
I wouldn't. The way Weidman's career's gone wouldn't surprise me at all. Tavares could knock him out early. Maybe Weidman grapples a little bit. I don't think the problem is what Weidman needs to do is wrestle, and Tavares' takedown defense is fucking legit. Like, good luck. I actually probably think there's value in, like, if this Tavares line comes down to minus 250, I'll probably throw him in some parlays. And that is depressing to me because I love Chris Weidman. But
Tavares was taken down in recent era by Omari Akhmedov. He was taken down by Antonio Carlos Jr. Elias Theodoro took him down a bunch of times. This was the one that disturbed me the most. The bulletproof takedown defense of Tavares, and we're going back a ways, but his bulletproof takedown defense has been long storied, right?
Yeah.
Elias Theodoro took him down.
Yeah, but his career's kind of ebbed and flowed. Like, he bounced back from that. Like, oh, yeah, never mind. Idrikus Duplessis shot 7 takedowns against him. Got 0. Got none. Didn't take him down once.
Yoel Romero got 7 takedowns. I don't know how, like, one person, how it could go so different from fight to fight. But, like, you know, yeah, he's had great takedown defense, but he could be taken down. I don't know how else to put it. Like, he got taken down a lot.
I don't know about Chris Weidman here. I think he's got enough takedown defense. I'm not very interested in Weidman. I like Tavares, and maybe it's the Mets Jets fan in me. Just my own team suck. My own guys suck. I don't want to play any Chris Weidman because he's going to fuck me. He's going to break my heart. I remember I had a bet on Weidman in that fight against Jacare, and he won the first 2 rounds and decides to get in a fucking war in round 3 and gets knocked out. I'm like, what are we doing? That was awful, but.
Man,
yeah.
That is some Give memory. You are going back. I'm like,
I remember vividly.
That far. Yeah, that wasn't that long ago, actually. Oh,
we were watching. We were with Tommy G at MSG. Mad Lab was there. Mad Lab had a bet on Jacare. I had a bet on Weidman. I was looking good, and then, you know, Lab cashed it. Good times. There was a bunch of MMA DFS OGs in the suite that night. That was fun. Geek, who you got for this one?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to go with Tavares. Listen, I just want to present the angles. There's no way I would bet on this fight. Let me start there. I think Chris Weidman's probably a better fighter, but, like, you'd be crazy to bet on this fight for exactly the reason you mentioned in the beginning. The last time we saw him, his leg literally snapped into. I can't watch the replay of it. That's how horrific it is. Like, something about a leg snapping is more horrific than other violence. And I can't even watch it. Like, it disturbs me to this day. And so it's like, are his bones brittle? Is this a thing where he's going to get in the cage and something will snap? And usually that's how these things go. When a body starts to fall apart, it just keeps getting worse. But I mean, that's just pure speculation. So, like, what do we really know? The matchup also isn't the best for Chris Weidman. Like I said, Weidman absolutely needs to get takedowns. Striking is not very good. And he needs to get takedowns to really have a shot at winning fights. And this is the epic, you know, legendary takedown defense guy in Brad Tavares, who got taken down 7 times randomly by Yoel Romero and got taken down multiple times by freaking the Spartan, who doesn't take anybody down. So there's some factors out of our control. If Weidman is completely finished, then Tavares might just come in. Tavares, who knocks out nobody, decision machine, might come in and just get a finish. But the more likely scenario is, you know, usually when Tavares fights, they go to decision. He does not have a ton of knockout power. Tavares inside the distance plus 125. I think a lot of that is built on just like Weidman's fragileness. So it's like, do you bet on the fragility of an older fighter who seems completely washed and should not be coming back, and he's coming back and we're all like, don't. Chris, you should quit. And we all thought it went after his last fight, you should quit. Or do we go with the tradition of Tavares, who isn't much of a finisher and doesn't do anything to score well? Monk, you'll have stats to back this up, but I just know Tavares, yes, while he's scored well on occasion, most of the time he goes to decision and he has a terrible score. So he's not like a DraftKings guy that I want to play unless Weidman is completely compromised and just falls apart and crumbles and allows Tavares to get an unlikely finish. When you look at the odds on the fight, it's plus 110 plus 110 to go the distance, minus 150 to end inside of this. So the odds makers are saying two or three rounds. Like, this could go a while. As crazy as this sounds, I do think you need exposure to this fight. I think you need exposure to Weidman just in case, like, he can do a grappling heavy win at his price point. He's so cheap that a grappling heavy win probably is enough to get it done. And you probably, normally I would not even look at Tavares as a DraftKings play. The only reason I'm going to play a little bit, a couple shares, and let me just look again at his salary. Tavares, he's so expensive. It's not good.
9,000.
Yeah, 9K. The only reason I'd play any of him at all is just a bet on the fragility of Weidman's body in general. That's it.
Monk, who you got for this?
Probably Tavares. I'm looking at rostering about 40% of this fight overall, probably 25 Tavares and 15 Weidman. Just that much Weidman just in case he's not completely spent, which I give about a 25% chance. So that's why I'm putting 25% on Tavares. He only scores 71 points overall per win, over 14 wins. Only one of those wins went over 100. Does have that good takedown defense that we've mentioned. Stuffed 82 out of 104 takedowns over his career. Like you said, Sniper, including 7 in his last one, has the better strength of schedule. Weidman's DraftKings numbers are actually very, very good over his career. But again, he's 39 years old, broke his leg, hasn't fought in like 2.5 years. 25% Tavares, 15% Weidman, and I'll be looking for spots elsewhere for sure.
Let's roll into our next fight. Chris, here's something that was weird. I don't know if that was, there was some weird sound on my headphones. Sorry about that. Gregory Rodriguez, minus 365. Come back on Dennis Tululin, plus 275. DraftKings, 9,500 for RoboCop. Tululin, 6,700 on the comeback. Fight does not go to decision. That is a number we need to pay attention to here because it is massive. It is, did it get pulled at this book I'm looking at? Yeah, minus, depending on the book you're looking at. Minus 650 some places, minus 575 others. It's massive. And that's how I'm approaching this fight. This is one of my favorite. Though this fight was the highest inside the distance prop on the card, I did drop it in my GPP rankings behind the main and the co-main just for extra rounds. And if it takes RoboCop two rounds, maybe he doesn't get there. It's still a great fight to target. I was, you know, pitting. I was probably, you know, nitpicking, but RoboCop is going to throw down. You know he's going to go to war. Tululin has got power. He's got the puncher's chance. It's really that simple. Sometimes you don't have to overanalyze fights. RoboCop's better, but he's wild and reckless and fun. Maybe he gets caught, but he should win. I'm going to go with RoboCop and just take my GPP hedge and move on. Don't play this one in cash games. Monk, what do the numbers say about how Rodriguez fights scores? It has to be massive.
Very well. Highest ceiling on the entire card at 135. I mean, he scores 7 points a minute inside the distance, allows less than 2. Overall, it's almost 4.5 to just 2.6 for his opponents. 3 of his 4 wins over 100. 53% takedown accuracy at 2.5, almost 2.5 takedowns landed per 15. A perfect takedown defense, but a very small sample size. I mean, he controls 70.5% of the grappling time, 13, almost 14x. Per win. So yeah, I'm going to be very heavy on Rodriguez at 9,500, which makes optimal 45% of the time. Tululin at 6,700. I'm not really interested there. His only win is over Jamie Pickett. So yeah, I have like next to no interest. I assume his ownership will be less than 10%. Maybe I'll go 10% on him just because Rodriguez is so wild. But last thing I'll say, $6,700 salary, 4% win rate overall since 2021. Just 4%. So yeah, maybe I'll double that and go 8%, but no more than that.
I want to sidetrack for a second because I'm somewhat interested in the numbers voodoo. It's not the end all be all, but I'm interested. So you said 9,500 hit at 45%. Have you done the math all the way out? Like, can you build me an optimal lineup? Like, just like
with like high percentage,
yeah, like calories? Can you put together the six most frequent optimal lineup hits and make a salary, make a lineup that's like 49-6. Like every week I just play, this is the most likely to hit the optimal. The 9,500, the 7,700, the 83, can we build?
I mean,
like
you're getting six? There. 77 is definitely one of them. 72, probably as talking. Well.
Do you have this in a sheet for our members somewhere? Or is this all
you beef the... this is starting to turn into the Burns Millimaker book. Like beef it up with adding in the 125-pound female fighters, and you literally can't lose a card.
Right? I just want to, if you can give me the numbers, or just tell me what the most optimal lineup is in terms of for GPPs hitting the optimal just by salary. If you can get me that lineup, I'll start blindly running it in $15 every week until it hits. If you can get me that,
there
you
go.
Please send it to me. Please send it to me.
Absolutely.
Right. Gabe, what you got for this fight?
So I'm going to have some Tui Lulin, as I think you have to have exposure to him just because RoboCop gets knocked out. That's the one thing. Like, he is not a trustworthy chin at all.
He's got a vagina crack in his forehead. Remember that?
I am not going to talk about that part of it, but he does have a giant head, but he gets knocked out. So if
do you not remember what I'm talking about? He was the one who had the cut on his forehead that looked like a pussy in the middle of his forehead. Like, it was enormous.
Yeah, he actually looked like RoboCop because his eyes across his nose was all connected.
The actual fight should have RoboCop. Been stopped.
It what was fight was awful. This? Why don't I remember it?
Chidi.
That was fine. It was cheating.
I can't believe you don't. I couldn't even go on Twitter the next day because people were just posting the picture all day.
I'm sure I saw it live, but
you could again, see his fucking like whatever sure the fuck is under there. I'm doctor, but
I'm sure I did. And when I see it again, I'll be like, oh yeah, I remember seeing that. But I, you know, at this moment, the leg break worse than the cut, no matter how bad of a cut it was. But like, I'm just going back to Rodriguez gets knocked out. He got knocked the fuck out in his last fight real quick in round one, right? So he's coming off of round one, get knocked out. It's been a while. That was in January. But, of course, Rodriguez, the problem with him is at 9,500, I have not done – can you afford a lineup with Rodriguez, Zhang, and – and Aljo in there, and if you can, that'd be really interesting for me. So I do think you could probably get it going. Gregory Rodriguez, obviously the massive inside the distance prop, the massive finish prop, the horribleness of just the general horribleness of his opponent here. Everything says he might get a quick finish. But
I'm trying to pull up the. There it is.
I don't remember that. I don't think I saw it. I do not recall that. Why are you putting this on screen? It's disturbing. But I don't recall it. So I must have not seen that fight. But in general, he does get knocked out. He won. He beat Chidi. So he got that and then went on to win. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
You know, impressive. So I think Rodriguez probably wins this fight. Let me break it down. Rodriguez is probably going to win this fight. And he probably will score really well along the way. It's a massive finish prop. If you can afford him in your lineup, get him in there. I think you have to probably have a side of this fight. Also, Rodriguez has that takedown upside if he needs it. Like, he can go for a takedown. You don't see him do it in every fight because they finish quickly, but he has that in his repertoire. And Tui Lulin does not come off as somebody who could stop a takedown.
And he loves to get submitted too.
Yeah, there's a finish here happening, and it's probably Gregory finishing him. If you could afford him, I'm squeezing him in. I'm just trying to see if, like, so I'm looking at the group.
Range is so stacked this week, it's not even funny. You have Andrea Lee, you have Damone Blackshear, you have Amanda Lemos.
Do not throw Andrea Lee in there.
Well, no, I mean, there are others.
She's got a fantastic opportunity at 68.
And I'm picking Pedro Munoz to win. I have other ones. So I think it's okay. But also looking at the top group, you know, I'm not excited about Ian Garry. I told you, I don't know how excited I'll be about Natalia Silva up there. We'll see when we talk about that one. Mario Batista, I'm not super excited about. And Tavares, I'm not excited about. So for me, this would be the third favorite guy in the 9+K range. Could he elevate above Aljo? No, probably not. But I like him, and I like him in this range.
Let's keep going. We got to talk about the tough finales. Both the fights are not good for DraftKings. This one is the better of the two, though. Kurt Hallabaugh is plus 150, 7,800 on DraftKings. Austin Hubbard, minus 175, 8,400 on DraftKings. Should have had it pulled up. The fight, we do have the tough lines were a little bit weird to get this week, but this one we did have. Fight goes to decision. Goes to decision is minus 130, minus 125 at DraftKings. And to me, this one, Hallabaugh's live, sure, but Hubbard has more tools in the toolbox. He can grapple if he wants to, and I think he should be able to. It's really close in the feet. Hallabaugh looked really good in his tough semifinal, and I think people are putting a little bit too much stock into that. It's a close fight, sure, but I think Hubbard's just a little bit better everywhere. Not a ton of upside for me in this one. There's better places to go, but I can get behind a little bit of Austin Hubbard. It kind of just, it depends how much he's willing to grapple in terms of scoring. Bet-wise, I think the number's about right. It's kind of just, I'll just leave it there. It's not edgy the way. So my pick is Austin Hubbard. Monkey, go first for this one. What do you got?
Yeah, probably Hubbard. Full disclosure, I have not watched Tough. I have no interest in watching Tough at all. I do have some stats. If I want to see Connor all tweaked up, I can just open Twitter whenever I want. Austin Hubbard, I do have some stats for him. I do have some stats for him. Both the stats for these guys are not good for their UFC careers. I mean, Hubbard 3-4. Hallabaugh went 0-4 in the UFC. One was to Steven Seiler, and the next three, this is laughable. Hey, welcome back, man. Why don't you fight Hione Barcelos, Shane Burgos, and Thiago Moises back to fucking back to back? Like that is ridiculous. So he is 0-4, and I want to make fun of him for that, but he did have to fight three fucking killers. So that's why his stats look so bad. Hubbard's lost to Pichel, who I do like a lot. Also lost to Joe Selecki. I mean, beat Dakota Bush. I just 20 to 25% of Hubbard, maybe 15 to 20 of Hallabaugh, and that's how I'm going to play this one. I don't like it for cash, so I'm not going to worry. I'm just going to completely ignore the tough fights for cash, most likely. Pretty relatively low, probably around the field as far as GPPs go.
I could make an argument for Katona in cash, but in GPPs, I hate tough all around. Geek, who you got?
So I would argue that neither one of these guys has a UFC win because the UFC wins that Austin Hubbard had were not against actual UFC people because those guys were gone just as quick. So Austin Hubbard, really low level. This is just low level stuff. I don't see a big score necessarily happening here. I'm with you, Monk. You put your 15%, slap it on either guy. Hubbard, I don't like the price. Obviously, you got to pay favorite money for Hubbard, and I don't like that. With Hallabaugh, he just has not shown any ability to win a fight in the UFC. I don't know why that's starting now. So between these two guys, somebody has to win, but I don't think it's going to be pretty. I would say that Hallabaugh probably has better scoring potential than Hubbard for multiple reasons. One, because he's the underdog, so at 7,800, I don't need as much. But two, if you actually look at his UFC fights, I mean, he put up a 60, a 53 and a loss to Hione Barcelos. That's an impressive score. That's an impressive score and a loss. I don't even know. He got a knockdown against Shane Burgos. Like there were things that Kurt Hallabaugh did that were impressive on his way to losing those fights. So at least that. So I'm gonna go anti. I'm gonna go with the anti-hero. I'm sticking with my Taylor Swift theme because my kid won't turn off the T-Swizz music. She went to the concert. Going with the anti-hero, Kurt Hallabaugh. Underdog will be my pick. I think he's the better play on DraftKings. And if I need to, so Monk, as we're weighing our exposures, I'm going to push a little bit of that bar over to Hallabaugh. So maybe I'll go 25 Hallabaugh and like 10 Hubbard. Something like that. I'm going to go heavier Hallabaugh. I think if he wins, he's going
to
score better.
I don't have a strong enough take to talk you off either side. I'd probably lean Hubbard because I think he can wrestle, but I have the take is lukewarm at best.
My guy put up 45 against not that great, but against Thiago Moises as well. Got some takedowns. I think Hallabaugh showed better scoring potential.
Sure. Like I said, not a strong take for me. All right, let's move on to the other tough fight. Brad Katona minus 155 against Cody Gibson, plus 135. DraftKings, 8,500 for Katona, 7,700 for Gibson. I have a fight goes to decision is minus 250. So you see the scorecards here. I have a pretty, I guess, moderately strong take for this fight in that I think Katona is better everywhere. I think the real finale, the real final, was the semifinal fight, and you guys didn't watch, but it was Katona against Timur Valiyev, which is a good fight, split decision. I think Valiyev won, but it was not a robbery. It was bloody. You should go watch that fight, honestly. It was a bloody mess of a fight, and it was fun. But both those guys are better than Cody Gibson. I don't think Katona's got a lot of scoring upside, which the minus 250 inside the distance number kind of indicates. But I think there is value on Katona minus 155. I like that bet a lot. I think him and Valiyev are the best guys in the fight. I think he can grapple. I think he's the better. I think he's just a little bit better everywhere. I think there's value in minus 150, but it's shit for DraftKings. Gikui Udiev.
Yeah, tough card, tough fight to want to use either of these guys in my DraftKings lineup. I agree with you, Sniper. I don't. It's not a good take for DraftKings purposes, but I kind of think Katona's the better guy. Katona did not look bad in his UFC run. Honestly, I
should have been cut, and neither should Timur Valiyev. They both should be in the UFC.
These are guys that were perfectly acceptable UFC fight. They were not good fighters. They're not like top 15 guys, but Katona seemed like the kind of guy that would float around the UFC, got a win. He has a win over Bryce Mitchell. I get it. It was 2018, but he has a win against Bryce Mitchell. That's an impressive win. He's got a real win. He's got a win against a real fighter, Matthew Lopez. So, you know, these guys are not zeros. There's nothing wrong with taking a loss to Merab Dvalishvili. Everybody's going to lose to Merab. So for me, I think Katona's a little more of a legit fighter, but I'm really curious, Monk, on the numbers. The numbers don't make sense for me on this fight outside of just a little bit of that. This is that fight that you just want that little bit of, you know, somebody gets an early finish. Let me look at the inside the distance propositions here to see if there's anything that stands out. Katona inside the distance plus 450. Gibson inside the distance plus 330. I mean, it's not pretty. You want that amount. So translate that into a percentage, and that's your exposure.
Yeah, it's really not pretty. Katona historically 2-2 in the UFC, just 77 points a win, allowing just 90. His only good stat is he controls 61% of all the grappling time, but he gave up 2.25 takedowns per 15 minutes overall.
Gibson, throw that out. It's Merab.
Gibson, not, you know, there's not really any good numbers for him. He does have a decent power index, which is knockdowns per significant strikes landed. And he did put up a gigantic score in his one UFC win, 126 points, which is crazy. But again, very small sample size here. Probably doing the same thing as I did with the last one. Keep my ownerships relatively low. I'm probably favoring the favorite at 8,500. I think they came in at 85 and 77. But again, maybe that magic $7,700 underdog salary will come through. So I do want to have a little bit of exposure to both guys, but not too much overall.
Who the fuck is Johnny Bedford? I had to go look who that was. I've been watching the UFC
Gibson's for losses, a long time. and outside, you know, Gibson's losses are not embarrassing losses. They're fine. And his UFC losses were not, you know, anything like horrible. You know, he lost to decent guys, whatever. I still think it's Katona.
Moving on, we got Gerald GM3 Mearshart. He's a plus 190 dog, 7,400 on DK. Petrovsky, minus 230, 8,800 on DK. This is one to like on DraftKings. I'm going to let you go first again because I want to hear the numbers on this one because I feel like we got some – these guys in theory, at least in my mind, I just see finish or bust for either.
Basically, Petrovsky, a fantastic DraftKings play. In fact, that's even too low of an adjective to use. He is one of, I believe, two fighters. I don't even know. I have to check. Four wins, four optimal lineups, 100% optimal rate so far. Volkanovski has that in five fights, but one of them was a loss. So Petrovsky, 100% win rate still. I mean, almost 5 points a minute overall, allowing like one. Inside the distance, he's scoring 6 points a minute, allowing half. 104, almost 105 per win, three of his four wins over 100, 57% takedown accuracy, and he's landing 5.5 takedowns per 15 minutes, controls 93% of the grappling time, 12.5x average value. I mean, there are no bad numbers for this guy. Maybe his strength of schedule is a little subpar with Gilmore, Yao Zhang, Maximov, and Wellington Turman. But what are you going to do? It's his first four fights, and he's done exactly what he is supposed to do. Getting finishes, what, early and late, I believe. Yeah, early against Maximov, and 2 third-round finishes, 1 sub, 1 KO. What else can you ask from this guy? I mean, stats are fantastic. I'm going to be playing a ton of him. And in fact, if you don't want to go crazy on Aljo, this is the pivot spot at 8,800. This is the one. Get Andre Petroski in your lineups, guys, because Gerald Meerschaert has been subbed before. He has been KO TKO'd 4 times. So what is this? 5 losses out of 8, all finishes. He also scores pretty well, but it's nothing compared to Petroski. Only 94 points per win for Meerschaert. But both guys, I mean, you got to have some of both guys here. You got to play Meerschaert for obvious reasons. If you've watched any of his last 3, 4, 5 fights, you know why you have to get him in there at 7,400. And Petroski, probably, honestly, super sneakily, I think the kids say low-key, the best DraftKings play on the entire card at 8,800, in my opinion.
Yeah, he passes the eye test, and then he's looked better each and every fight he goes out there.
You seen this guy's freaking beard, too? Oh, my goodness.
The beard love. I'm on Petroski too, but I'm not going to sleep on Meerschaert. You said 90 something points in a win. That's fine at 7,100. Yep, and he has kind of gatekeep checked some prospects before. You know, he knocked out Bruno Silva. He submitted, I think it was a club and sub win over Bruno Silva. Everybody loved Bartosz Fibinski, subbed him out. Like, he's got plenty of submissions. Petroski wins this fight, probably dominates, bigger power, better wrestler. Meerschaert, it's an awkward kickboxer. I don't think Petroski's going to have a problem with it, but maybe. I think mostly it's going to come into the wrestling. Petroski's is just going to be on top of him. Just don't get caught in a submission. And would it stun me if Petroski gets caught in something? Like, you know, leaves his head inside and a GM3 snatches up a guillotine, or leaves his arm out in the ground. It's going to take a mistake like that. I'm not – the pick is Petroski. I'll have more Petroski, but I'm not going to be under on Meerschaert. I'll probably be a little bit over on Meerschaert once I see these ownerships, because at 7,100, I don't trust Petroski enough to not get caught in something fucking stupid and us go, all right, he's 4-1 in the UFC, made a mistake. You know, like, I can totally see it playing out. So, like both sides of this fight, don't sleep on GM3, but for sure Petroski's the play.
This is one of the few fights – where I feel very certain of the outcome, certain enough to the point where there's a hedge available that should be riskless, but nothing's ever riskless. This is going one of two ways. Either Petroski is winning this thing, period, or Meerschaert finds a submission along the way. Meerschaert is always dangerous. He will go to his back. He will flop to his back. Like, when you take a guy who wants to get takedowns like Petroski and you throw in a guy who wants to get taken down like Meerschaert, there is no there is an immovable force meeting a very light resistance object. I don't even know if I got that right. Force object. I don't know how that expression goes. I need my alpha brain. Don't have it right now. Ran out. Got to call Joe. But So Meerschaert by submission, Monk, is plus 370. And there's a possibility. You could just play Petroski to win and then hedge it fully with Meerschaert by submission at plus 370. And there's 150 points of sort of free money to be made here.
What is Meerschaert in just finish inside the distance?
What's Meerschaert, it says, you think Meerschaert could get a knockout?
No. Meerschaert. I just want to know the difference between the two lines.
Okay, Meerschaert inside the distance is plus 240. So, you know, not as good as plus 3. Well, let me look at that same book though here. It's not as good as plus 350, 370. So, like, it's plus 240 though inside the distance. So you could do that, but that doesn't work. So for me, there, I don't see any scenario where Meerschaert wins a decision. I don't know how that would happen. Petroski losing on the feet, Meerschaert gets a takedown of Petroski. What is that? Where is the version of the fight that plays out where that happens? I'm telling you, I can always envision different things. I cannot envision it. I see this fight going one way. Either Petroski says, fuck that, I'm standing, and I will knock this dude out in the first round, which he might choose to do, but he might say, I don't want to go to the ground with this guy. That's a scenario that could play out, right? Second, more likely scenario, Petroski, like, I don't give a shit about his submissions. I'm a better grappler. I'm a better wrestler. I'm going to take him down. I'm going to fight my fight. And he does it, and he takes him down, and he submits Mearshart. That could totally happen. Or he just beats his ass. That can happen too. And then there's the third scenario. Again, it starts the same way, except in the third scenario, after Petroski gets that takedown, at some point in round one, round two, round three, Mearshart does his Mearshart things and figures and just gets a sub.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, you delay a lot of juice, but the Petroski decision only line is basically like just a free roll, and it feels like
it really should look like the Joe Pfeiffer fight, though. This should look a lot like that.
It's 100%. So to bring this back to DraftKings, because we're all here to find out who we're playing on DraftKings this week, you loading up on this fight. This is an all-in situation. Back the truck up. Boner alert. That's my new thing.
Well, I'm glad you're going to the football pod. I need to hear about boner alerts for 3 months.
I'm going to clip Rihanna singing it, and it's going to now appear on my podcast until YouTube's like, you can't play 3 seconds of Rihanna.
You're going to get us 3 strikes, but it's your channel, so
yeah. You can't play 3 seconds of boner alert. It's from a Lonely Island song, and it's one of the better songs.
I'm going to save us all here and talk about, me and Mug get the fight now. Cool. Andrea Lee +270, taking on Natalia Silva at -330. Lee $6,800. Silva is $9,400. Fight, let's see. Got to scroll down here, get towards the end of this card, guys. Fight ends inside the distance is +130. So -175 to go to decision. Look, Andrea Lee is fine, I guess. I think Natalia Silva is the real deal. That's what this comes down to, honestly, to me, is how good of a prospect do you believe Natalia Silva to be? I'm not going to take any cheap shots about Andrea Lee and who she's dated. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to tell you she's dated terrible people. That would be way, way beneath me. I think as a fighter, she's all right. I think Silva's good. I think... it's weird. I just think Silva's going to be able to pressure her as long as Silva doesn't get judo thrown, that hip toss throw. We've seen Andrea Lee land a ton. I don't really see where Lee has anything for her other than it is, you know, I don't want to call this a low-level women's MMA fight. The next one is, but this one feels like, I think Natalia Silva's going to be climbing up the rankings. I think she's going to be clean enough on the feet. I think she's got a grappling advantage. I think a big submission advantage should she get the fight to the ground. I'm a little skeptical on the scoring because of she's got to get it done early, and it is a step up in competition for her.
Let me ask you a question.
Plays that I like, but I don't like Andrea Lee.
Let me ask you a question, Sniper. Yep. If this would change your mind. If Andrea Lee had defeated Macy Barber, would you feel differently about this fight? You're looking at the loss. She lost to Macy. She lost to blah, blah, blah. If she had defeated Macy Barber, which she did, would that change your mind about this fight? Just saying, because she did defeat Macy Barber. That was bullshit.
Not really, because styles make fights. Silva's not going to stand and do what Macy Barber tried to do. Silva is going to go in and try and take Andrea Lee down. If you're going to tell me Andrea Lee's 54% takedown defense is going to hold up, I'm going to disagree with you. And I think once this fight is on the ground, I think she's in a whole fuck ton of trouble. It's a matter of who's going to get top position. And I just think Silva will. I guess you can make the argument that at that line, you can play Lee, even though I'm not on her, you can play Lee in cash games for that, you know, -175 goes to decision, should be a grappling-based fight, could end up on top. Sure, I'm fine with that. I struggle to see 100-point upside. And with enough dogs I like, I think it's going to take a couple winning dogs with a big score. I don't think we're going to get the 75-point squeaker this week. If we do, then sure, Lee is live for that, I guess. I disagree with it, but if you have a strong take that way, I wouldn't hate it. I have a hard time seeing the 100-point slate breaker against Natalia Silva. I get that. I had to look at the go back into, you know, yeah, she beat Antonina Shevchenko and she finished Cynthia Calvillo. Before that, it was yeah, a while. So I don't know. I don't see a path to a big score. I just don't. If she wins, I think her best path to victory is stopping the takedowns and out kickboxing Silva.
At 6,800, if she wins, she's almost a lock button in the nuts, regardless.
No. See, I disagree with that. If she scores 80 points at 6,800, sure, she's there. But if two guys in the mid 7Ks put up 100, it's done.
Yeah.
Then if you can fit the six highest scores, regardless of who they are, the 80 is not going to be enough. And I there's enough dogs I like who are potential to smash. You got O'Malley, who we said we like. Lemel, she's got the crazy power. Black Shear, we think, is undervalued. I mean, Tallulah, and you have to mix in some of him. I have a hard time getting there. There's other options above it.
Do we know for a fact that Natalia Silva's takedown defense is all that great? Or, I mean, it's good. She hasn't been taken. She was taken down in her second fight in the UFC by Teresa Bleda, who is good at getting takedowns. She was taken down by her. Victoria Leonardo is a zero. Jasmine couldn't get her down. And she tried.
And what is Jasmine? Down. Jasmine's taller. Jasmine's stronger. And that could be what Andrea Lee is here as well.
I think this fight is I really think that if you had a W next to Andrea Lee's name over Macy Barber, this line would look very different. So this is what bothers me about the fight. She's not plus 260 if she beats Macy Barber coming off that win.
Yeah, I feel like I'm lost an opportunity to bet Silva. But I'm not betting for the line is too wide.
You can't bet. If you right. have to have a death wish to bet lay minus 310 on
absolutely not. Silva. I'm saying if I got Silva at minus 150, minus 160, like you're saying she would be if not for that win, I would bet her at that number.
And by the way, in that scenario, great, but it's not. So now you get Andrea Lee at 68 or 6,700 on DraftKings. I don't think she's going to win, but I think female MMA, Monk, anyone can win. These fights, you should never lay minus anything more than 200 on any female fight. I don't care if her name is Amanda Nunes and she's fighting some soccer mom named Juliana Pena.
No, go ahead and lay that number.
Because I lost my ass on that one. Marina Agapova fucking lost to Shayna Dobson. Any one of these women can lose a fight.
Did you just compare Nunes to Agapova? Because I just
were both minus 1,000 and they both lost.
Shayna Dobson. Oh, good times.
She lost to Shayna Dobson.
I remember. I was there. Whatever that fucking pre-fight show was. As soon as she did that, I went, uh-oh.
Oh, no.
I remember out loud. I was watching with my wife. And out loud, I went, uh-oh.
Oh, no. Monk, never bet a female fighter. No. At minus 300, always take the underdog. What do you have?
Yeah, that, especially when the underdog has 10 UFC fights that and a very good wrestling numbers historically. Yeah, you definitely should. Silva, I'm extremely worried about her paying off her very high $9,400 salary. Yeah, she scored 108 against Leonardo, but one of you just said that Leonardo was a zero. She only put up 85 against Bleda, and she put up 85 against Jasmine Jesutavicius. She does that, there's no chance she's even coming close to sniffing the optimal lineup on this card for sure, when we've talked about so many dogs hitting triple digits this week.
See, we do agree on something. See?
Yes, Andrea Lee, I think has gigantic upside at 6,800. This is ridiculous. I'm glad she didn't get that win against Barber, because we'd be paying more for her this week. And she has fantastic numbers. I mean, does not score well per win, like only 91 points, but she has the second best floor on the entire card, only to Zhang Wei Li, and scores pretty well per loss. Also, lands over 2 takedowns per 15, does give up a bunch, but also has some reversals of her own. I just think, like you said, at 6,800, we don't need to score 70, 80, 90 points to get close to the optimal lineup. I think with her floor, 50 to 60 points, I think she's going to disrupt a couple of things there. The last thing I'll say about all of this is, what is Silva, 9,400? I like Rodriguez more at 95. I like Zhang more. I like Batista more. I like Tavares more. I like Sterling more. I like Petroski more. I like Chito Vera more. All, basically every favorite I like more than Natalia Silva this week at 9,400. So, yeah, I'm probably going to go over.
Do you like Ian Gary more?
No, maybe. I think they're probably, he scores better in, well, I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah, I got him. I got him. Yes.
Maybe not. I'm not an Ian Gary fan. Whatever he does after those weigh-ins just makes me want to just, I just want to, I'm done with you, Ian Gary. I don't know what that face is. I don't know what you're doing up there. But yeah, so I like a bunch of favorites more. I do love that it's women's flyweight, so that does add a little extra allure. But yeah, I'm going to be looking to go well over the field on Andrea Lee this week in cash, in GPPs. If you get her in, you can have basically whoever you want. Pair her with Lemos, with Blackshear, with whoever, I mean, O'Malley. You can get whoever you want at the top end now that you've done that. So I think Lee could be a decent key to a lot of this. I thought she'd be high owned, but sounds like people aren't going to be putting her in.
People don't play as an ownership's man. People, once you get a six in front of your name, the ownership just implodes. No one wants to play a high 6K. You're like, why not? He's cheap. And the assumption is if they're 6K, they suck. And so no one will play that. So no, she will not be high owned. I think Lee is the best cash pay down option on this entire slate. I think when you're doing your cash lineup, instead of punting one of the favorites, one of the main events, you could just throw Andrea Lee in there. That's your 6,800, and you can easily make a quality lineup.
Yeah, you just go, yeah, stop giving away lineups, damn it. Because you could just go Blackshear Lee and then get a ton of the 9Ks. And
exactly. Itself.
there it is. And that's it. And now you could just plug in the favorite. There's another pathway, though, because I picked Munoz to win his fight. I think you can. And there's another underdog still on this card that I am picking to win their fight. Still yet to come. So I don't want to spoil it.
There's only one fight left. Let's do it, because I have a unnaturally strong take about this fight in the other direction.
All right. Well, that's fine.
Let's talk Marina Moroz.
I do have a bet on this fight. So
Marina Moroz at plus 135. Taking on Karini Silva, minus 155. Moroz is 7,900 on DraftKings. Karini Silva is 8,300 on DraftKings. Fight ends inside the distance. I got to refresh this. It's minus 115. It's a pick'em. To fight ends inside the distance for this one. Geeks, since you have a bet in this fight, why don't you go first?
Yeah, so I do like the underdog here. I am a Marina Moroz is a dog. She got that dog in her. Like, she doesn't give up a fight. And so when I first saw this, I thought it was I thought it was Natalia Silva that was fighting Moroz, and I'm like, okay, she's slightly favored. And then I see it's Karine Silva, who, listen, she's won a bunch of fights in a row in the UFC since she came in. But she hasn't beaten anybody good. Like, Marina Moroz was just fighting, she was in the discussion for championship fights.
Are you not going to mention that Moroz has already beat Karine Silva?
How far back was that? 2014 is around. No, I'm not going to talk about
that. I was waiting for it. I was waiting for it.
No, that's not the reasoning. My reasoning is, what the hell has Karine Silva done? Poliana Botello lost to every fight in the UFC that she had. And Ketlin Sousa, the same, you know, not somebody who has UFC wins. So Karine Silva has no evidence that she belongs in the UFC. She might, but she has no notable win, nothing. The fact that she's favored over Marina Moroz is insulting to Marina Moroz, who has real wins in the UFC against real opponents. Mara Brena Silva, Maria Agapova, you make fun of her all you want. She's a bad bitch. Danielle Taylor, she has real wins in the UFC against real opponents. She has proven herself. To me, she shouldn't be the underdog. I'm not saying that this is like, oh my God, she should be minus 300. I'm just saying this is the underdog. Where are they coming up with this? There's nothing about this fight that tells me that, and I want to pull up their stats, but there's nothing about this fight that tells me that Karine Silva should be the favorite here. So that's my prime concern. Does she go for takedowns? Yes. Could she get a takedown? Maybe. But I've seen Marina Moroz get back up. She gets back up. She's not a completely terrible wrestler. You know, she was doing the taking down in her fights recently. A lot of her bad takedown defense number just comes from the one Carla Esparza fight. So, and certainly from earlier in her career. Can she stop a takedown today? I don't know. But all I know is it's not like she's been wrestle fucked. And that's the only path for me for Karine Silva to dominate. So I'm going Marina Moroz to win this fight. I have a bet on Marina. And I prefer the bet as Moroz by decision, which you can get a little more juice on. So if you go Moroz by decision, you can get, is that DraftKings? Anywhere between plus 200 and 250 right now. Plus 200, plus 250. Fuck yeah, because I think that happens 50, maybe more than 50% of the time.
I'll go next so that Monk can
break. You can counter me. Counter me. You got to counter me.
And then Monk can break up. So the fight that I referenced quickly, just to not leave it hanging, that was in 2014 in XFC. They were, I think, Marina Moroz was 22 and Karine Silva was 20. So barely counts, but that's just the background to it. And it was win via armbar. The reason why Karine Silva is a favorite is because of that nasty submission, weird thing that happened last time out. And the fact that she, as of late, has been running through people. She's, you know, the knee bar over Ketlin Souza, some first round win over Pollyanna Botello. Second round win on the Contender Series, and her two SFT wins before that both came first via first round submission. You get Marina Moroz, who I do think is you can take her down. You kind of whole screen just froze. You can take her down, and I think Karine Silva's submission grappling, from what I've seen, is far improved. I think she's made bigger improvements since the first fight than Marina Moroz. And part of this is the eye test, because I think objectively, looking at who they have fought in the recent history, and you've seen strength of schedule of Silva and what Moroz has done in terms of being toughness, I get it. But in terms of just what I've seen, I Karine Silva to me has made jumps in her game that make me think she is the real deal. And I'm kind of extrapolating off of that. I think she's going to be able to get on top. I think she's going to be able to find a submission. If Moroz can stop the takedowns, I think it's a close fight on the feet. I would probably lean towards Moroz, honestly, if it stays on the feet. But I don't think it's a big edge. I think the biggest edge in this fight is the submission grappling of Karine Silva that has made a lot of improvement. And it's weird to say that because Moroz has submitted her once before. It's just what I've seen recently and the improvements that they've made. And just Moroz is the dog, but Silva just seems cleaner and sharper and just better. So it comes down to cleanness versus toughness. What's going to win out? It's one of those fights I am way more into this fight than I probably should be. I'm excited for the first fight of the night. And I think it could score well either way, because if Moroz does stop takedowns, I am worried about, I guess where I'd be worried about Karine Silva is if she sells out trying to get these takedowns too hard. Because sometimes I want her to shoot. If she doesn't get it right away, reset and go. I'm worried she's going to burn everything out trying to go for this takedown and get, if Moroz can drag her to deep waters, I'm not going to be feeling good. I did bet the other side of this fight. I did bet Karine Silva. I think I did one unit Karine Silva to win, and then I did like a quarter unit for her to win by submission.
I think you're crazy. I think you're absolutely out of your fucking mind. Win or lose, out of your mind for taking that bet.
Well, luckily you like some of my other bets in the card. I just watching tape, I'm just thinking, man, she's legit. I just think she's legit, and we're gonna find out. Watching
tape against fucking Ketlin Souza, she sucks. Some of these women are terrible. So the second they get into grappling, they haven't trained it, and they suck. And you look like a world beater. Marina Moroz is a serious bad motherfucker. She is a bad bitch. And she is not,
help us out.
She's not going to be run through.
I mean, her last five is nothing crazy. She lost to Maya. She beat Myra Buena Silva, but Myra Buena Silva's come a long way, especially in her striking. We just saw that against Holly Holm. Maria Agapova, by all accounts, in fact, by your girl, Marina Moroz's account, is a legit crackhead. And Sabina Mazo is terrible.
I forgot to lead up to that fight.
Yeah, crackhead. And she used to train with her. Moroz
She said she smoked crack.
Yeah, she made it very clear that she witnessed her smoking crack.
Who hasn't smoked crack? You know, like, you're making a big deal of that.
Sabina Mazo. And then Sabina Mazo. Like, what are we doing here? Like, I don't put a bunch of stock in many of these wins from Marina
Mara Buena Silva. You cannot take away the Mara Buena Silva win.
That was back in 2020, man.
But she's only fought one other time. I mean, come on. What are we judging her on? We only have what
I'm judging her off of her total DraftKings score, in which she averages 80 points per win, and she's the most expensive dog on the card. Oh. That's barely 10x. Barely,
I don't think it's a good DraftKings spot. We didn't get to that, but we didn't even talk about that. I think these are both terrible DraftKings plays.
This is a terrible DraftKings spot. I mean, betting wise is fine, but for DraftKings, it's completely awful.
Yeah.
And I'd be all over Silva at 8,300, the cheapest favorite on the card. Yeah. I'm going to be looking for a submission. I'm going to be looking for a ton of takedowns. Moroz has what, a 47% takedown defense? Like, there's nothing good about Moroz that I want to roster her for DraftKings. I don't think she's worth 79. I don't think she's worth being the most expensive dog on the card. And I'm going big time. Maybe not big time, but I do like Karina Silva at 8,300, cheapest on the card. Yeah, she hasn't fought anyone either, but this is a super low level women's flyweight fight. And while I do agree with you, the betting money should probably be on Moroz, although Silva could look like an absolute, you know, a first round finish, and you could feel terrible after holding the Moroz ticket. Who knows here? But for DraftKings, I think there's only one way to play this, because Moroz, I mean, unless she's fighting either a crackhead or Myra Buena Silva, which she landed 140 strikes in that fight. And Silva just fought one of the best strikers in the division. I don't care how old she is, in Holly Holm, and absolutely had her way with her. So she's come up levels. I do agree now that win looks good. But back then, that win did not look very good. It was a completely run-of-the-mill win at that time. So, I like Silva here, and I like her much better for DraftKings.
Kill shots. It's time. Under own play on DraftKings, who can help you bring home the money. I need you guys to give me a verdict first, because I want to say Damon Blackshear, but I feel like it's going to be super chalky.
No, that's an acceptable kill shot.
Sweet. Absolutely. Blackshear.
Yeah, that's a very acceptable kill shot right there.
And I'm going first, and I got Blackshear. Anybody got one else in the chamber?
Monk, where are you going with this one?
Oh, you guys should know already. Andrea Lee, 6,800, best dog spot on the whole card for the value, baby. Let's go.
I can't wait to argue with you about this again tomorrow, motherfucker.
I love both of those kill shots. Andrea Lee, solid, great value. Damon Blackshear could win the fight. Didn't leave me a whole lot. I'm between two spots here, guys. I'm picking
Munoz
to win his fight. Yes. And that is where I'm going with it. But
who'd you take?
I'm taking Munoz because I think he wins the fight. But if I'm talking about a guy who I think could win, but also has a little bit
of Tallulahden. You're going to say Tallulahden, aren't you?
Tallulahden, if he wins, is definitely in the nuts, but he ain't winning shit.
Okay.
I was gonna go with Hollibaugh. Just like, I don't think he'll be owned, and I do think if he wins, he's probably gonna actually put up a good enough score. I think he would outscore Munoz. But since I'm picking Munoz, I picked Hollibaugh as well. Oh man, you know, fuck it. I'm going Hollibaugh with the kill shot, a true kill shot. Where if it wins, by the way, I think we could discuss the fact that on the kill shot competition, of which this is the last week. So we've had a staff. Sniper, you're not even in the kill shot, are you?
I'm not in it.
I'm not in it.
I wasn't back on staff yet.
We started a kill shot contest when I came back from NFL break, I would say in March. And this is the last week. Monk, what are the standings looking like in that bad boy?
Who cares? I'm not in it. Who cares?
Well, the people should know. The people should know.
Well, I didn't put last week's in yet, but you were up by a little 100 points. 100.
I am a prohibitive favorite to win that. So
shocking. No. He wants to know who's winning.
And not a bad little kill shot run.
What a setup.
Who's winning?
I would think I thought Vince was going to run away with
that
it.
He thing we were doing. I forgot shots. About that.
Vince crushes the kill shots, but I got a lucky run. All right. So I'm going with Kurt Hollabaugh for my kill shot with a nod to Pedro Munhoz, who I think wins, but isn't necessarily somebody I think will score very well if he does win. All right, guys, that's going to do it for the breakdown here. We will, of course, as always, be in the DFS Army Discord talking fights. We're going to be optimizing using the Domination Station Optimizer. Also, projections got all that stuff locked and loaded for this card. This is a fun one. I can't wait to watch this card. Finally, we get an awesome, or just an all top to bottom, really fun to watch card. So I'm excited for this one, and I'm excited to take down another contest. We got another Mega Mini Max. One more. They gave it to us.
Gotta running it one more time for UFC
9,000 entries in the Mega Mini Max. Okay, they actually raised up the number of entrants. Still 15K to first. Probably the single best contest that DraftKings ever puts together from a distribution of funds perspective. Only 10% of the money to first. I sound like I'm touting DraftKings. I'm not. I just love this contest. It's super fun. So make sure to attack that one. Sniper, you'll hit us up with a Prize Picks video on this MMA card as well, I'm sure. So we got it fully covered across the board. Good luck this week, everyone.
Yep. Good luck, guys. Later.